Welcome to the Brisbane Property Podcast with your hosts Melinda and Scott Jennison from Streamline Property Buyers, your local Brisbane property specialists.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Brisbane Property Podcast. My name is Scott Jennison. I'm the Acquisitions Manager here at Streamline Property Buyers.
Good afternoon, everybody. Melinda Jennison from Streamline Property Buyers here. I'm the Managing Director and leading a team of buyers agents who actively pursue property buying for investors and home buyers across Brisbane. Now, today's episode is a little bit special because it has become apparent that there's been some listeners that have been sending in questions. Now, I will apologise that we haven't really done a Q&A podcast for quite some time because there's been a lot of other topics that we have been covering. But today we've decided to pull together some of the questions that have come through from various listeners over the past several months. Now, some of them I know they're no longer going to be relevant to those that have posed the questions. And for that reason, we do apologise to those listeners that have sent the questions through. But we did feel like some of the answers and the questions themselves will be relevant to many others. And that's the reason why we've decided to readdress some of these questions, even though they may have been sent a couple of months ago.
And another reason to do a Q&A as well, I had a phone call actually earlier today to a listener. Shout out to Mitch. He phoned earlier and he actually said to me that he's been listening to our podcast for a while and it's helped him to understand a bit more about the market and avoid making mistakes and to buy property for himself. So that's fantastic. I'm so glad that we can actually help people with the information we do share, and hence the reason, obviously, when we get questions like this, we can jump in and do a Q&A and hopefully answer more questions and help people out.
It's actually surprising just how many people reach out to us or come up and introduce themselves at events or auctions or even inspections that we attend on behalf of our clients. I was at an REIQ breakfast for buyer's agents just this morning, in fact, and other buyer's agents in the room who listen to this podcast actually came up to introduce themselves, and they thanked me for the information that we share, and they see value themselves in being able to articulate and summarize some of the information that we share through this podcast for them to share with their clients. So it's always useful for anyone within the industry to follow others and learn from the information that they share as well.
And I'm sure they're asking about the weather updates from me as well, which I normally give out to all our listeners as well, which is a little bit of a update there. Obviously, the weather's beautiful here in beautiful Brisbane. So cooled off a little bit. Well, we say it's cooled off. It's still pretty warm, but still beautiful up here in Brizzy. And there's no wonder people want to live up here and enjoy that sunshine. So
we jump into the questions.
Yeah, let's jump into the first one. So our first one has come in from Tony in Melbourne. So Tony has asked, what is the best way to price a property? I've noticed there are no prices on Brisbane listings, which is true. Are there online valuation reports? Are the online valuations reports okay to rely upon?
It's an excellent question. And in fact, it is something that we spend a lot of time educating our clients on when they do partner with us for the full buyer's advocacy service that we provide. What is the best way to price a property? Well, in actual fact, in my opinion, there really is a number of different ways that a property can be priced. Can you rely, and we'll run through some of those in responding to this answer, but the second part of the question is in relation to the online valuation reports. I think that they, Tony, you'd be referring to what we call automatic valuation reports. So they are based on mathematical algorithms, and there's various property sites that will provide an estimate of a property's value, for example, on the house and domain. You can get this sort of information from CoreLogic through RP Data as well. There's many sites that will provide an estimate of a property's value because of or due to or as a result of mathematical algorithms. What I will say is that in actual fact, they're a great way to provide a really quick snapshot view of a rough estimate, but we find they're grossly inaccurate. And in fact, we've got a podcast episode and we are collecting the data in real time for this episode. It's going to be up and coming within the next 6 to 8 weeks, where we're collecting a lot of information about properties that have been listed for sale, capturing the automatic valuation report estimate of value, and then we'll circle back post-sale to determine what is the discrepancy and just how reliable are these reports. And we're not the first people to do this sort of research. In fact, there's been a lot of others in the property investment research space that have actually verified the accuracy and the reliability of some of these online valuation tools, and they have been shown to be very inaccurate, especially in a market where there's a lot of inconsistency in the types of properties that are selling, but also in a market which may be rapidly changing in terms of price movement up or down. Because of course, any mathematical algorithms are relying on settled sales data, and they're not necessarily picking up what may have happened just last week or 2 weeks ago. And therefore they can actually come with a level of inaccuracy. I will say though, they're very quick. They can be produced en masse, and you know, a lot of the banks will even, you know, sometimes rely upon these automatic valuation tools to assess the value of a property. So I'm not disregarding their use within the industry, but don't take the value or the value range as an accurate prediction of what a property is likely to sell for. Because there's obviously more accurate ways to price a property, and it's what we do here at Streamline for clients.
Yeah. So when the auto vals are done, and just obviously help our listeners. So for example, there's a couple of houses in a suburb, very similar, obviously from the outside. But then, for example, one of them has had a kitchen renovation or a bathroom renovation. Those types of things that they can't actually ascertain whether that's been done and the difference in the price of those types of things. So that's where. To simplify it, I guess, you're not apples for apples when you're looking at those valuations.
They don't take into account different, you know, quality levels of properties, because it's based on maths and algorithms, and no algorithm can determine whether, you know, property number 50 in street ABC has been fully renovated, whereas property number 52 may be completely unrenovated. So this is where there can be some discrepancy in the numbers that they actually produce. So the best way to price a property, there's a couple of different ways. One is to look at the most recent comparable sales in a market that you're looking to purchase into. So, you know, we break that down into assessing the land value for the asset that you're looking to buy, and then the house value for the asset that you're looking to buy. Because when you purchase property, there's always going to be a land component and a property component as a whole. And sometimes if you're looking at a bigger block of land with a smaller house versus a smaller block of land with a smaller house, of course, that property with the larger block of land is going to cost you more. So you can quantify that additional value based on the land value itself. I would also say that you need to consider the size of the property as well as the quality of the property. And then there's more subjective things such as the layout of the home, the orientation, that can be an indication of the subjective assessment of value. So all of these things need to be taken into account when you are determining, you know, what is a property worth. Another way to assess value is replacement value. So you can look at what vacant land in the area might be transacting for at a retail value. And then you can assess what is the replacement cost. That is, what is the cost to rebuild the property on this site based on its land value and construction costs. So it gives you a couple of different ways to consider property valuation. And I hope that's been useful in answering your question.
And sorry, just on that, obviously when we do in-house, when we do our CMAs, so our comparative market analysis, we'll take into account obviously the sales. And as Melinda touched on, don't forget that those registered sales are 30, 60, 90 days old. So you've got to understand, as we do our market updates here on our podcast, where we talk about how the market's moved month on month, you take into account what the market is doing. Obviously, our team are out and about during the week, weekends, we're seeing what properties are selling for. So we get an understanding of what they're actually selling for on those weekends. We're not waiting a month to understand what it's actually sold for. We know what it's happening week in, week out. So we can keep that all up to date so we can understand where the market sits at the time. The other thing that Tony mentioned there about, and just touch on quickly, is the price is not being advertised. We get this a lot, especially from people down south looking to buy up here in Brizzy, how there's no prices advertised, especially if it's going to auction. It's actually illegal. They can't advertise a price up here in Queensland
on an
auction campaign.
No price guides are able to be given. And I know that's quite different to the price guides that are given in other states. And regardless of the fact of whether they're accurate price guides or not, here in Queensland, there's just no price guide. So, you know, as a buyer, if you're walking through a property and you actually know that property is going to be sold by auction and you ask the agent, you know, can you provide a price guide? The answer generally will be, look, no, it's an auction campaign. And some agents will provide a list of recent comparable sales. But again, be aware that that list might not be a fully comprehensive list of every property that's sold recently in the area. They might have been handpicked to show a particular value or a particular price point. So again, it's really important that as a buyer, you are doing your own due diligence to understand what has transacted recently. And the best way to do that is to immerse yourself in the market and attend local auctions, attend inspections, understand what properties are transacting for. And that's going to give you a really good understanding of the market that you are looking to purchase in.
So our next question, and we'll jump on the back, obviously, your last part you were talking about there was talking about auctions. Mm-hmm. And this actually leads into Liz from Holland Park here in Brisbane has asked the question, why should I pay a buyer's agent to bid on my behalf at an auction when the selling agent will do this for free?
I love this question. Thank you, Liz. I'm glad you've actually brought this question to our attention because it is something that we often see when we are attending auctions. That is, we see sales agents generally on the phone to a buyer and they are representing that buyer. But the selling agent that is on the phone to the buyer is part of the agency that's selling the home. So typically when you're on the phone to with someone during an auction, you have no visibility over what's actually happening in that auction environment. So you are relying on the information that you're being told. And I'm not suggesting that any of that information is being filtered. I'm simply suggesting that a sales agent and their team, their extended team, will always be working on behalf of the seller. And their objective is always to extract the highest possible price from the buyers that are bidding at that auction. So yes, there's going to be no cost to you in terms of physical payment for somebody to be bidding on your behalf if they are part of the sales agent's team. However, I would argue, is there a cost in the long term based on how they may actually represent you? Because if you're not there to have visibility over what's going on, you may not have full visibility through the information that's being shared over what is happening, which bid is holding the highest bid, which bid has stopped bidding, you know, who's actually entering negotiations, what's the body language of other buyers. You will have none of that information available to you. Yes, there's a small cost of engaging a buyer's agent to represent you when you are bidding at auction. And a lot of buyers are very nervous about bidding at auction and very emotional. And of course, you can get really caught up in the emotion of the moment. We've had buyers engage our services for auction bidding who prefer not to even be at the auction because they're so nervous about the process. And of course, we always work under written instructions. We're non-emotive, so we don't have an emotional connection to the process. Instead, it's a very objective process for us, and it's something that we're very familiar with. So we're very certain about, you know, the actions that we need to take, and we understand the legislation around what needs to happen throughout that auction process. And that gives buyers a level of comfort knowing that they're being represented by someone who's got their best interests at heart. They're being represented and their buyer's agent is advocating for them, not working in conjunction with the selling agent. So it's a completely independent service that you are engaging when you're engaging a buyer's agent who is representing you at auction. I hope that's answered your question, Liz.
Yeah, Liz. I mean, look, as Melinda has touched on there, I mean, we're professionals in that, and this is what we do every week. We go out and we bid for people at auctions. And that's obviously our job. It's as Melinda said, it's non-emotional. I think the biggest thing there, in a nutshell, is the selling agent will get paid the more that they actually sell the property for. Mm-hmm. So the more that it's, the higher the price, the more they actually get in their commission side of things. Whereas for us, we're getting paid to do a job, and for us, our job is to get it at the best price we possibly can, and to get that client that property at the best price as we can, because just you pay more, it doesn't mean you get paid more. It's, you know, that's our job to do that. So,
and in fact, I will actually extend upon what you've just said there, Scott, because there may be some buyer's agents that charge more if they are successful at auction. That's not our team. You know, we charge a fixed rate regardless of whether we are successful or not. It's a fixed flat fee to represent a client at auction. And there's obviously other service levels that can include pricing a property and full due diligence on a property for a single service only, for a single property, without having to, you know, engage a buyer's agent for the full search. So that's sort of an entry-level offering for a buyer's agent. Most buyer's agents will offer an auction bidding only service. But just keep in mind, you know, if there's incentive for the buyer's agent to get paid more if they're successful at the auction, perhaps ask the question as to why that is and how they're going to work to ensure that they're still actually going to obtain the best possible price for you throughout that process. Because, you know, any buyer's agent should be independent and acting to advocate for the buyer's interest.
So our next question comes from Sharon in Glenelg in Adelaide. I think Glenelg's down near the water, I believe. I'm not all over Adelaide, but
good to know we've got Adelaide listeners on the podcast.
I think it's down near the water in Adelaide. I think it's a very lovely little area. Sharon has asked, I'm hearing that a lot of buyer's agents can source off-market properties. We've heard from a buyer's agent we've spoken to that buying off-market will get us a better price, and also it means we could avoid auctions. I'm interested to know your thoughts on this.
Wow. This is a really interesting topic. So especially the comment that, you know, buyer's agents are saying that buying off-market will get people a better price. That's an interesting one. So when we're speaking to property buyers that inquire about our services, yeah, of course, a buyer's agent's job is to source properties regardless of whether they're on market, whether they're pre-market, or whether they sit in that off-market space. And perhaps it's a good idea to define those three things. On-market means it's been publicly listed on realestate.com or domain, and it's available to all buyers to view, and obviously open homes are most likely offered. Pre-market means there's going to be a sales agent that has been engaged by a seller to sell the property, but the property is still being prepared to be listed online or on those major real estate portals. So there's a commitment from the seller to sell, and they're working with the agent to prepare the property. Perhaps they're doing minor repairs, they're potentially organizing some hire furniture to come into the home to present it for sale. That's the pre-market space. And then off-market can be can mean there's absolutely no sales agent involved, or that the sales agent doesn't really have an appointment form as such. But if the seller gets the price that they're comfortable with, then the sales agent can bring the transaction together. Or in fact, a buyer's agent can deal directly with a seller to make that transaction happen. So it's interesting that there's the promise of a better price to buy off market, because actually in our experience, and this is something we always will share because we're ethical and we want to provide honest information to people, is that to buy off market, sometimes that requires you to pay a premium. Mm. You know, there's two parties involved in a property transaction. You have the party that's buying the property that obviously wants the best possible price and will pay the lowest possible price, but you've actually also got a seller. And a seller's not silly. Sellers know that they're not going to sell for a discount. And in fact, any seller in the current market generally knows that if they're going to list their property for sale, especially here in Brisbane, they're going to have a volume of buyers lining up to consider that opportunity. So the seller wants to know that if they are going to sell off market or even pre-market in that case, they're going to get a better price than what they think they're likely to get if they list online. So I absolutely don't agree that you get a better price off market. You know, there's going to be some unique circumstances where there might be motivation to sell quietly. That might be a divorce, or it might be a family breakdown. It might be that, you know, a seller doesn't want nosy neighbors knowing that they're actually transacting. And in some instances, there could be opportunity for a better price. But I would argue that there's fewer of those properties transacting off market from the motivated sellers compared to those properties transacting off market where buyers have paid a premium, and they've paid that premium for the privilege to eliminate the competition. And I think that, you know, it's so important for buyers to understand that yes, you can buy properties off market, but it does not, absolutely does not mean that you're going to buy them for a discount. And you need to weigh up the pros and cons of stretching to have the security of no competition or not.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, Sharon, when you asked that. We do talk about this a lot and get asked a lot. And some people, you hear some people promising that they get 75% of their properties off market, things like that.
Does that mean that they're paying overs 75% of the time for their clients?
I guess my question on that would be why? Why are you getting so many off market? Do you pay, how much more do you pay? Because when you look at an auction, and in your question you asked, would mean avoiding an auction. I mean, an auction is an honest price. You know what that next person is actually going to spend and prepared to spend to buy that property. And if you buy it for $1,000 more, you've bought it literally for $1,000 more. My other question, I guess, would be to, you know, for Sharon, for example, if you own your own property, and I turned around and said, would you sell it off market? Would you sell it off market?
Or, and would you sell it cheaply?
Or would you sell it cheap? Or would you say, no, I want everyone else to have a crack at it and see if they could buy it? So, yes, as Melinda said, there are circumstances why people do this. And as buyer's agents, yes, we do buy off market. But there has to be the motivation. There has to be a reason that is actually happening, and understand that not just because it's off market, you buy it and you don't know what the other person is going to spend, and you might have actually overspent buying it off market. So it's knowing the market, it's knowing the circumstances, the reasons and things like that. I don't think, people looking to buy property shouldn't make their sole decision just because someone says that they can buy them properties off market.
Absolutely
I don't think
not.
That's a really good decision when you're looking to spend a lot of money on an investment, whether it's your own house or whether it's an investment property. Don't make that sole decision just because someone says they can buy properties off market.
A lot of what we see off market actually is not of the quality that we would typically be recommending for our clients. Anyway, there are some good properties, as we keep saying, it's not a blanket approach, but sometimes the promise of off market is not always what it's made out to be. And you should be considering all properties, whether they're off market, pre-market or on market, if they are a match for what you're looking for, regardless of how they're being advertised for sale or whether they're not being advertised for sale, they should be considered. So I wouldn't be purely looking for off market only, because you're going to be missing a big segment of the market, especially those where sellers will not sell off market because they're motivated to see what the market is prepared to pay for their property. And obviously, that's going to be guided by the sales agent that's representing them as well.
Yep. The next one is a local question, actually, from Wavell Heights here in Brisbane. Philip has asked a question. I'm pre-approved and ready to buy an investment property. I've heard it's best to buy a house rather than a unit or a townhouse. Is this true? And can you explain why?
What a ripper question, Philip. Thank you for sending this in. And again, I apologise because Philip's probably now already purchased and we hadn't previously had an opportunity to address his question on the podcast. However, Philip, if you're still an avid listener, then if you're still in the market, hopefully this will provide an answer for you. And if you've gone ahead and purchased, hopefully it will provide you with some information for next time.
Philip, I was going to say Philip might want to buy again.
Maybe. I would argue that, regardless of, whether it's a house, unit or townhouse, it's not actually going to be the deciding factor. It's so important if you are a property investor to understand what it is you're trying to achieve in terms of capital growth targets and yield targets. It's also important to understand what your risk appetite is and also what your exit strategy is, because, if you intend to hold the property for 10 years, it might actually be a different type of property that would be recommended compared to something that you intend to hold for 30 years. And I think this is where getting advice from a qualified property investment advisor who holds the accreditation certified through the Property Investment Professionals of Australia, or PIPA, you're going to get more tailored advice based on your personal circumstances. Because the other thing, Philip, is that what you buy might also have implications in terms of, what else you already own, how your portfolio is already set up, where you are in your investment journey, whether it's the first property that you're looking to buy or whether you're actually in consolidation phase and looking for a little bit more income into the portfolio. So it's very hard to answer the question as a blanket, this is what you should buy, because without understanding the objectives of the purchase, it's very difficult to just say you should definitely target a house. Because when we look at the performance of houses and units, or houses and townhouses, or units and townhouses, they'll all have different pros and cons depending on what an investor's profile actually is. For example, houses will typically have lower cash flows. So what I mean by that is the yields, the return on investment on a house is going to be lower because you're spending more typically on the land component because it comes with a larger land portion, whereas a unit, because you're getting a smaller land portion, typically has higher cash flows. And this is not a question about what is the better property type. I think it comes down to understanding what an investor needs. And regardless of whether it's a property that you are purchasing for capital growth, or whether it's a property that you're purchasing more for income, I think it's important to understand the land to asset ratio. How much land are you going to get as a portion of the total purchase price? Because a unit on a block of 800 square meters, where there might only be four units on that block, is a very different proposition to a unit in a block of 100 units. So I think that's so important for investors to decipher as well. Yeah. I hope that's sort of provided some info.
I'm sure Pauline that works with us will get Melinda into trouble for her phone making a little noise there. But anyway, it wasn't me this time. The other thing, I guess, looking at that, and we've talked about units quite a bit in the past. I think 2 years ago, roughly, we said watch the unit space in Brisbane. It is changing, Brisbane. Units are becoming more and more popular. People are trying to get in closer to the CBD, so they're moving into the units. It's also affordability, what you can afford to get into that market as well. One other little thing to think about is the maintenance side of it as well. You know, if your risk appetite is quite low, you want to buy a house, there's probably going to be more maintenance on a house because you've got the external area, you've got the yard, you've got the fences, you've got a lot more property to maintain, and it will probably cost more if you start to do repairs and renovations and maintenance and things like that. Whereas a unit being a bit smaller and more compact, and obviously then you've got your body corporate side of it, which will cover the external common areas. So that maintenance side of it is something else you need to take into account. So Philip, hopefully that's answered a lot of those questions.
It's hard to just give an accurate answer without understanding personal circumstances. Yeah. That's probably what I would say. And I would also say that not every unit is created equally, because you need to understand how many units sit on the block of land and what is the size of the block of land, because you can still consider the land to asset ratio. If you've got an 800 square meter block of land with four units and you're in a blue chip location 4 kilometers from the CBD, you might find that the value of the land as a portion of that total purchase price is higher than a 600 square meter block of land that might be, 30 or 40 kilometers out. Regardless of land size, it's more about land value. And I think that's the critical piece of information. And for those people that really understand Brisbane, we know Brisbane's a less densely populated city compared to the likes of Sydney and Melbourne. So there's fewer units and townhouses throughout our city compared to Sydney and Melbourne. And therefore, those higher density units, absolutely, they might be, less of a value proposition from a land to asset ratio perspective, but some of the older units in blue chip locations, there might be more of a value proposition for those sorts of opportunities, again, depending on what you're trying to achieve as an investor. And I think the answer to the question is to get some tailored advice from a qualified property investment advisor.
And I think that will jump into, and I know we're obviously time-wise, we don't want to go on all day here, but I've got two more questions, and I'm actually going to combine them a little bit because it does almost jump in off the back of the last one where we talked about the units. So I'll throw both of these questions and we can summarize both of them if you like. So the first one from James in Hendra, he said, I already own two investment properties in Brisbane. Should I buy a third investment in Brisbane or should I look to diversify in another location? The other question, which comes from Sarah in Geelong, I'm planning to buy my next investment property in Brisbane. There is a lot of information out there and I don't know where to start. What advice can you provide to help me to decide where and what to buy? Now, I think a lot of that will come down to that investment strategy, as you talked about, through someone like a qualified property investment advisor for both of those. And on James's, before Melinda jumps in, obviously what we talked about with Philip in the last, the previous question was that the units, houses, things like that, there are other ways to diversify.
Mm.
So it can be a unit, it can be a house, it can be in a different location. There's different ways to diversify within the same city when you're looking at buying investment properties.
Yeah, if I talk to James's question first, diversification can come in many different forms. And a lot of people think the only way to diversify is through location. And that's certainly a great way for those people that may not be willing to explore some higher risk asset types. So what I mean by that is, yes, you can diversify by spreading your investments across multiple different states or multiple different cities or regional townships. And that's going to ensure that if one area outperforms or underperforms, you've got that location diversification across the portfolio. Other ways to diversify is through investment types. So there's obviously residential investments, there's commercial, there's industrial. So there's different asset types, and different asset types may be cycling at different rates, even within the same capital city or regional market. So I think that buyers need to understand, depending on where they are in their portfolio build, whether they're in the accumulation phase or the consolidation phase, the type of asset to add into their portfolio may vary depending on what they're trying to achieve at a particular point in time. And also it may vary depending on their risk appetite. I'll also say that, you know, for some people with a unique skill set or a particularly high risk appetite, you can also provide some diversification through manufactured equity. And you can look at more unique ways to drive value into properties in an area where you can access trades. For example, you can renovate to add value. You can knock down and rebuild to replace an older home with a brand new home. You can subdivide to actually increase the yield and create two properties from one. And of course, you can increase the yield further by creating units or townhouses on a site. And these are all ways that you can potentially diversify within your portfolio without relying 100% on location diversification. And it's just important for you as a buyer to understand the options available to you, because once you develop a professional team within your network, sometimes, you know, it can be easy to continue that conversation. Of course, anyone who's completely independent and ethical will always advise you if some location diversification is required. And I know with some of the clients where we're managing a portfolio build for them, when diversification by location is necessary within their portfolio, we simply refer them to other reputable buyer's agents who are REBA members and also qualified property investment advisors in other areas where we know they're looking to buy, so that they can actually get local expert knowledge and someone that will abide by professional codes of conduct in those locations. So that's a great way to build out a portfolio, relying on the network of other professionals.
Now, I'll put a challenge to you. Can you do that fairly quick for Sarah's question? What advice do you give to provide to where to start and what to buy?
Look, I always start with the numbers. You know, it's so important to understand first your capacity, what you can afford to spend on an investment property. And there's going to be an affordability level that you can't surpass. But then it's about understanding, what are you trying to achieve? You know, what are your goals for capital growth? What are your income targets? Is there a yield requirement set by the broker or the lender that you need to consider? What is your risk appetite? How long do you intend to hold the property? What is the exit strategy? Do you intend to pay down the debt or sell? These things are all questions that need to be answered before you decide where to buy and before you decide what to buy. And of course, working with a qualified property investment advisor, you will get that sort of advice up front so that you can get the clarity around the numbers. And once you've got clarity around the numbers, then that person should be able to guide you through location and property type recommendations, because that's going to be unique to every individual's personal circumstances.
Excellent. Well, we've covered some of the questions that have been sent in. Look, if you do have other questions, love to send them in. We'll try and get around to them a little bit more regularly than we have this time. So it's been very busy getting as much information out to everyone as we possibly can.
And just so that you know, the email to send those questions to is info@streamlineproperty.com.au.
And if you've interested to know, as you know, we had Sarah there not knowing what to do, how to do it, feel free to reach out to the team at Streamline Property Buyers to have a chat. We're free to talk to. And we're always happy to chat to people to try and help out if we can. So feel free to do that. Don't forget to tap us on the shoulder if you see us out and about at opens and inspections on weekends or weekdays. Always good to talk to people and chat to people that love listening to our podcast. So as usual, I will let Melinda wrap it up and say goodbye from myself. Take care, have a good week, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks very much. Bye for now.
Thank you again for tuning into the Brisbane Property Podcast. As always, if you've enjoyed our content, please share with friends and family, and we would love for you to leave us a review on the platform that you're listening to the podcast on. As always, we enjoy producing these episodes for you. We look forward to speaking with you again next week. Thanks so much. Bye for now.
Thanks for tuning in today. Please remember, everything we have spoken about on this podcast is general in nature, and we always recommend that you obtain independent advice in relation to your specific circumstances. If you liked today's episode, don't forget to subscribe or leave us a review on iTunes. And of course, tell your friends about us. If you would like to get in contact, please visit www.brisbanepropertypodcast.com.au or email us at info@brisbanepropertypodcast.com.au. Feel free to send in any questions, and we will try to answer them in future episodes.